This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
I'm Lucy Hawkins from the Global Story podcast, where the BBC's Jeremy Bowen has been speaking to Ahmed al-Shara, the former jihadi and former rebel who is now leading Syria. How does he see the country's future? Does he have the power to make it a reality? And how worried should we be about his past? Find the Global Story wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Estás escuchando The Fifth Floor.
The Fifth Floor dinliyorsunuz. Bizimle kalın.
Tumya Ektay, The Fifth Floor, Farnak Amidi Sobat.
This is The Fifth Floor, at the heart of global storytelling with BBC journalists from all around the world. I'm your host, Farnak Amidi. Many of you listening will recognize this next sound. It's the robot who decides the fate of participants in Squid Game, the hit 2021 Korean TV drama series that got us all glued to our screens. It's a tale of survival, and as of July this year, it is the most popular non-English language television show on Netflix. The show was a global sensation, but the international popularity of Korean drama didn't happen overnight. From Japan to Brazil and from India to Nigeria, K-drama fans are all over the world. So what is behind the K-drama craze? And what makes a good one? To help us unpack this and offer some recommendations for shows that we can all binge over the holiday period, I'm joined by three aficionados. With me in the studio is Samantha Hak from BBC World News Content and Julie Yunyang Lee, a BBC reporter from Seoul who is working in London now. And joining us all the way from Lagos is BBC Pigeon journalist Faith Oshoko. Welcome, ladies and super fans.
Hey. Hello.
Hey.
I'm really looking forward to this. Julia, I'm going to start with you. You are from South Korea, so
yes.
You grew up with K-drama basically as part of your life. But do you remember when you actually got interested in it?
I think it first. Was really natural if you're born and raised in South Korea because it's part of your life already. Mm. For example, whenever, you know, your dad's back home and mom's at home, like in the evening time and you're having a dinner, we always watch this TV drama together. So it's already part of your life. So it's naturally you can get into this drama world as a kid.
Mm. And Faith, what about you? You're in Nigeria. How did you get into it?
I was in my first year at uni. I was just watching my roommate watch a Korean series. And it was this image of a girl looking lovingly at a marked paper, only to find out that she wrote a love letter to the boy of her dreams. Oh. And he marked the errors on it and gave her a score of D minus. And she was looking at it with adoration. And I was like, who is this person?
So that converted you.
Yeah. And then I watched the most easy drama to consume. It was so good. Fight for Your Way. And then I got one of my favorite songs from the drama. I don't know, do twe, all I want to do.
You know Korean? What is happening to you people?
Girl, they got us. They got us.
They definitely got you. What about you, Samantha?
Oh, mine's is nowhere near as dramatic. I mean, I was literally just sitting there and looking at Netflix, and it came across as World Cinema, this Mr. Sunshine. And I thought, oh, he looks quite chiseled drawed at the front. But I thought, oh, it's global cinema, and I'm a very serious person, and I like my global cinema and global drama. So I watched it. And every weekend, I was just so excited because they were doing weekend drops. When it finished, I didn't actually know what to do with myself. I was tweeting out on social media, and I'm not a social media person, saying the third day that Mr. Sunshine is gone, the fourth day, I don't know what to watch anymore.
And when was that?
That was 2018. I can remember. I can tell you the date. It's 2018. And then I thought, can anything get better than Mr. Sunshine? But I pressed the button for another one. And then I just thought, I can't do Western drama anymore.
Here you are. So, Julie, tell me, what are some of the main ingredients that make a good K-drama?
For me, I think one of the most important thing about, you know, good K-drama is the one with the very compelling character, because the character is such an important ingredient in the Korean dramas. So, for example, if we can see, you know, the main character's growth or there are some emotional struggles, all the emotional development and those kind of stuff is very important.
Mm. The main thing about it is that K-drama is that I go, does it have the feels? Does it have the flutters? Which I mean, is there any chemistry between the boy, the girl, or even the mum and the daughter, or the dad and the son? It's got to have that almost kind of electrical pull. I'm allowed to feel strongly when I watch a K-drama in a way that I don't with American dramas. I mean, I'm not knocking American and British dramas, there's very good ones, but I don't have that same kind of pang or that same kind of euphoric high.
Why is that, you think?
I think it's to do with the writing. A lot of writers are female writers, so you've got the kind of what you call the female gaze on it, and it just kind of has more heart, more soul. It also deals with things that are actually impacting real life. Crazy as it seems, like private finance in hospitals, which we don't even talk about in Britain in our medical dramas, but it's like this impacts everybody.
Faith, you are nodding. I see you on my screen on the Zoom. You agree, yeah?
Something that spoke out to me in the beginning was how they promoted their culture. So in the first few Korean dramas that I watched, from Playful Kiss to Boys Over Flowers to Personal Taste, there was something very interesting. They were very focused on somebody cooking for somebody else, which really made us, me most especially, be like, oh, I want to taste this love food that Lee Min-ho is cooking for this girl. And I was so invested that I saved my money to buy jjajangmyeon for the first time. And that's what makes it so much fun for me. Plus the comedy. Some of them are really funny.
Okay, so for me, when I first heard of it, I thought it was just, you know, very like romantic,
right.
Maybe a little cheesy or gushy, but it seems like there is a genre mashup. Samantha, can you tell us about it?
Oh, the genre mashup is one of the things that makes K-drama very unique. There was one recently, well, in the past year, called Death's Game, and it sounds like a kind of horrible kind of old boy film style kind of thriller. But by the end of it, I was crying because it was very deeply philosophical and had about family values and family guilt. Was not expecting that. And then you'll also get like ridiculous. There's another one called Live by Your Name. It's a medical drama, time traveling romance, where somebody from the Joseon period who does acupuncture comes into the future and meets a modern day doctor, and they swap ideas, but then they also fall in love, and then she goes back to the Joseon period and introduces her modern day medicine. So it's got all these different layers, and then of course there's also like deep sadness for like filial duty, etc. So you know, this is what I mean by mashup. You are not going to get that anywhere.
What I will say is that the different genres really helped. When I started watching it, the more I got deep into it, I discovered, like Samantha said, the core topics, the bringing up of topics about mental health. I still believe they make the best representation for mental health in any genre I have watched. In Boys Over Flowers, somebody almost took their own lives because of school bullying. So all these lessons, even in the bigger story of a romance, is very interesting to look into.
Yeah, so definitely the more recent dramas reflect some of the societal issues in that, in the piece. So obviously, you know, things like, you know, mental health kind of issue, it was not really recognizable in South Korea, but a lot of K-dramas now addressing this kind of issue, like self-acceptance. It's a kind of really good way to raise awareness of this kind of issue as well. You know, the drama, you know, can show how this school bullying kind of make a huge impact.
Well, so is school bullying a big issue in South Korea?
So it has been a big issue, but the thing about this drama is that when the drama, you know, became really, you know, big and disturbed, then people are talking about it. So that's why people are thinking that, oh, this is a really important issue. We really need to, you know, fix some kind of system and stuff. So, you know, all this kind of societal issue is very universal, not just specific to Korea.
That's why it resonates.
Exactly, resonates a lot of, you know, global, you know, the audience. For example, like, you know, the gap between have and have nots, like, you know, social class and those kind of things, it's just universal. So it's not just, you know, for a Korean. So a lot of international audience can actually, you know, resonate with that story.
Yeah, that's why they become so popular. So Julie, you remember the time Korean drama was consumed mainly domestically and it was watched on primetime TV, sat with your family and watched it. But do you remember how it initially started entering the global market?
I think it was a pretty recent year because, for example, in the past, you used to, a lot of, you know, K-dramas were mostly about, like, you know, family drama. Like, you know, everybody can watch it, and very, you know, romantic drama as well, also romance, family and stuff. But I think, you know, with the rise of this whole global streaming platform, I can definitely see there's more international audience watching K-dramas. It was kind of really phenomenal for me as well.
Initially, when K-drama started spreading outside of the borders of South Korea, for instance, to Philippines or Japan, how did that happen? What made that move take place?
From what I understand, it was actually the Korean government that had kind of put buy-in, because they saw the cash cow in terms of, you know, importing their labor, so to speak, and the labor being Korean drama. So they paid for just brilliant translators. And so you wouldn't need to give it to Japan or the Philippines or even India. And then those distributors try and scrabble around for a translator. The Korean government subsidized it initially. So it was a real big push. And then that's how it started to spread. And that is actually an economic kind of strategy.
Yeah. And what about you, Faith? What do you think about this recent craze in K-drama? What do you think has hyped it up?
So the initial craze in the Nigerian space was because of Boys Over Flowers by Lee Min-ho. And that's where I entered it in 2010. But even before then, when you go and meet some young men and they will tell me that I don't like Korean drama, but I like this particular one, Jumong, which was like a fighting traditional drama back in the days.
It's such an old one because I remember they showed it on Iranian TV.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I love it. Julie, tell me, has this impacted tourism in South Korea? Because I think it's not only K-drama, it's K-pop, it's K-food, it's K-fashion, it's like K-everything.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely, it had a huge impact on Korean tourism because there's a lot of different filming spots, in not just in Seoul, even near Busan and some other in the Jeju Island. So now people watch a lot of K-dramas, so they recognize some of the places and they really want to go there and visit the place.
We have a common friend who did that.
Yes, exactly. And I was kind of really surprised that some of the people are visiting some of the very small village in some towns, like, because, oh, this one is from this drama. This is my favorite drama. So it's more and more international foreigners, you know, visiting Korea now because of this whole K-culture, you know, craze.
Wow. Samantha, you have Bangladeshi heritage. Is K-drama popular in Bangladesh? Is this something maybe you talk about with your family members over there?
The last time I went to Bangladesh, I was really shocked because my cousins started talking about K-drama just in a kind of natural, you know, conversation. And my ears pricked up because obviously I didn't say that I was into K-drama. And suddenly I noticed in the streets, in some of the kind of more kind of like wealthier neighborhoods, K skincare shops, K food shops. It's a big deal. I mean, actually, one of my family friends, she said to me, she's a student, and she said, I've got a K business where I distribute K skincare just by watching Korean dramas. I mean, it's phenomenal. I don't know any other non-English speaking drama that has impacted Bangladesh, that I've seen that kind of effect in. I haven't seen that in kind of Middle Eastern drama, Egyptian drama, maybe Turkish drama among some of my uncles. But there's also a crossover from, like, Turkish dramas do a lot of kind of makeovers from Korean dramas. So some of my cousins have seen, well, I saw the Doctor's Turkish version first, so I don't need to watch that. I can watch another Korean drama. So, yeah, it's quite surprising that I was quite, like, wow.
Yeah. Faith, tell me, there has been recently Nigerian Korean crossover drama. Tell me about it.
So a Nigerian content creator, she makes content for social media and stuff like that, decided to enter into the film industry and decided to make her first movie in Nigerian Korean, like, mashup. And it got, like, a lot of, like, positive international recognition because, like, they were speaking the language. One of the things that the producer told me that they were trying to do was put a lot of the emotion that goes into the cliches of a Korean drama into this movie. So apart from just speaking the language, they got a bunch of people with Korean descent to appear in the drama. So it was very interesting.
You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
World of Secrets is where untold stories are exposed. And in this new series, we investigate the dark side of the wellness industry, following the story of a woman who joined a yoga school only to uncover a world she never expected.
I feel that I have no other choice. The only thing I can do is to speak about this.
Where the hope of spiritual breakthroughs leaves people vulnerable to exploitation.
You just get sucked in so gradually, and it's done so skillfully that you don't realise.
World of Secrets, The Bad Guru. Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I'm Farinah Kamidi, and in this episode of The Fifth Floor, I'm talking about K-drama with three BBC World Service journalists, Julie Yoongang Lee, Faith Oshoko, and Samantha Hak. So, Samantha, can you tell us about how the studio work has changed? It used to work in a different way. Now it has changed.
The studio system was quite a rigid system in which you would be kind of beholden to 16 parts episode, or sometimes 24 parts, soap operas, one that I'm watching, 50-part or 100-part episodes. And that was to do with, you know, the adverts, slots, scheduling.
It was just one season.
It was mostly one season. There was only a few that I understand correctly would be on to season two and season three, but they were, like, phenomenally popular. But most of the time, it was 16 parts. That was a good thing because it means that we can watch a whole drama and we're like, it's over. It's done, start to finish. But sometimes it also kind of was problematic because what would happen would be you could tell the writers were running out of steam. So sometimes you get the curse of the last episode that doesn't make sense. And you think, oh, that could have finished four episodes earlier. And what streaming has done is that's completely disrupted that system. So now you can get 12-part, 6-part, 5-part. You're also getting seasons one, seasons two.
And a lot of these writers are celebrities. They're quite well known. It's unlike other series that you see around the world. Do you all have favorite writers, Faith?
My favorite Korean drama of all time, name of the drama is Coffee Prince. It was the first time actor Gung-kyo was writing. He wrote that character, a girl was acting like a boy to take care of her family and get more jobs. And that is my favorite writer because I can still watch that series till today.
Wow. Samantha, who is your favorite Korean writer?
I think it'd be, is it Kim In-suk?
Kim In-suk.
I mean, just because I've consistently liked a lot of her her writing. She did Mr. Sunshine, so obviously always a special place in my heart. And she also did this one called Goblin, The Great and Lonely God, which even now just talking about it is just getting me quite emotional. Yes. Goblin, Great and Lonely God is about a man who lived thousands of years ago and he becomes immortal for some sin he did thousands of years ago. And in order for him to break the curse, he needs to meet somebody
human bride
and have a human bride. And it's about their relationship and also the kind of suffering that he has to go through, the pain of loss and him being in eternity, just going through life like a twittering bat.
So living forever is not benefit, obviously.
What I like about her is that she's got range. She can do fluffy, she can do dark.
Diverse.
And she can do period drama swoon. You know, it's diverse.
Julie?
You know what? Actually, it's kind of really funny because I was about to pick same writer as well. Like, Kim Eun-sik is one of my favorite writer. And I think she's kind of the wizard of this lines and beautiful lines and stuff. So I really love her writing.
Nowadays, there's this worry that because more and more of these global streaming platforms are getting into K-drama, K-drama might lose some of its identity or try to, you know, become more appealing to other audiences. Would you say that is happening or that might happen?
I can see it happening already. Oh, I can see it happening. Yeah, I even saw it with The Glory, which is Kim Eun-sik, and who's a traditional Korean drama writer. I saw it with the fact that there was a lot of skin that I saw, which I wasn't expecting to see. You wouldn't normally see sex scenes, like full-on sex scenes, but I've seen a few of them. And the other thing that I'm seeing differently is that there seems to be, we talked about the female gaze, but there's a bit more of a what you call bro kind of writing, like male directors now moving over to Korean drama, kind of, you know, elbowing. And you can definitely see the difference. There's a lot more kind of violence. Some of the things I wouldn't recommend to my friends who've got families because they might not be able to watch it with their children. And so I've definitely seen the pressure on writers.
That could be dangerous for their industry as well, because maybe that was the reason why it was so popular and became exportable, because people felt more at ease watching it together, like families, because, conservative cultures, like, for instance, even in Iran or Japan, most probably families don't want to sit around and watch a sex scene together, or even kissing, I remember, in some families, you didn't want to watch it.
It's interesting you should say that, because some of my friends that got into Korean drama in the past few years have said to me that they've stopped watching Bollywood because Bollywood's getting a lot more racy, and they can now watch Korean dramas with their children, and that's one of the things that they that really appeals to them. That is something that I do worry about. I think, oh, don't lose your USP. Please don't lose your USP K-drama.
But I think I have to add one thing on that, actually, because I totally understand there's some concerns about the uniqueness of Korean dramas. But for the Korean writers and directors, all the creative industry, you know, they can actually break some barriers, like, you know, because they can explore more different genres and diverse kind of, you know, themes. So maybe in terms of the creativity, maybe it can be good for them, actually. So I think it's kind of double-edged sword, because it's always good and bad.
I understand where people are coming from with the conservativeness that they expect from K-dramas, but I don't know that that is the only USP that they have. No.
This is the last question, but we have to talk about this, because the new season of Squid Game is coming out on the 26th of December. So for those people who haven't watched it, can you just tell me what the concept is?
So it's basically a survival drama where a group of people who are financially suffered, and they're just to participate in this deadly game where they can play a lot of different children's, you know, Korean very traditional children's game. But the only difference from the reality is that if you lose, you die. So that's a really deadly game. But we can but we can actually see some of the human natures and you know, some of the capitalism and how people can be really cruel in this kind of situation. So that's the all the thing that you can actually see
and
in that.
Are you all excited to watch it? Are you all gonna be watching it? Samantha has her doubts.
As a K-drama Puritan who believes in the 16 episode and it's over, I thought that the ending was fine as it is, and I just think, you know, all the pressure from the streaming giants because it's popular, let's do a second one. I do wonder if it's going to live
be
up,
as good,
be as good. I will watch it, but I won't be rushing to watch it.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Faith?
I will rush to watch it because there are people around me that are waiting to give me spoilers. I am very excited.
I know we can talk about this forever and ever, but thank you so much to all of you super fans of K-drama. I'm definitely going to watch some of these that you recommended. Julie Yoon-young Lee, Samantha Hak, and Faith Oshoko. Thank you all. I'm Farhanak Hamidi. The Fifth Floor team this week was
Hannah Dean
and
Alicia Joya.
The sound engineer was
Sue Mayo.
Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
World of Secrets is where untold stories are exposed. And in this new series, we investigate the dark side of the wellness industry, following the story of a woman who joined a yoga school only to uncover a world she never expected.
I feel that I have no other choice. The only thing I can do is to speak about this.
Where the hope of spiritual breakthroughs leaves people vulnerable to exploitation.
You just get sucked in so gradually, and it's done so skillfully that you don't realise.
World of Secrets, The Bad Guru. Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.